That was super gross. I'm really glad it didn't start recording when you did that. Your show is 2 weeks away? No, a month away from a couple of days ago. Right, David?
Yes, that is correct.
How is it going?
It's going okay. So, I mean, I wish I had more pieces. There's going to be about 25 or so. And
that's a lot.
I feel like 15 of those pieces are super solid. And I feel like I wish I had time to replace the 10 other pieces or have a little bit more. But I'm doing okay. I'm
good.
I'm not completely stressed out, but I am definitely like, this is what I do every single day and evening, getting ready. And what typical Picciuto fashion, when I'm not shooting videos of everything, I will start projects and then start another project before finishing the last one. And I had to make a deal with myself to not start any new projects until all current projects are done. And even video projects that look done on YouTube still have a couple little things needed. For instance, like the big cassette tape that I made, there's an acrylic window on the front, but I needed to put an acrylic window on the back as well, so dust wouldn't get trapped in there. And then I had to replace one of the 3D printed screws because I printed it on different filament. You couldn't tell on the video, but you know, it's one of those things like I got to replace it. And most of my projects have that little like, oh, they need one more little thing. The big arrow light that I made a couple months ago, I didn't like the base and I thought it was too tall. And I made a base out of a drum rotor, drum brake. And I finished that. So I've just been going through and finishing all the old projects and keeping inventory, and it's going okay. I thought I would be really stressed out, but I'm doing all right.
Good.
I'm in a really, really good rhythm. Like, I'm enjoying going into the shop every night and doing stuff, fun stuff.
Do you think there's anything about this rhythm that you will continue on? I mean, obviously you can't stay at the same pace and the same intensity, you know, but.
It's because I'm doing a lot more experimentation and things that I haven't done, like a current project. I've been using some heavy body acrylic to try to build up a texture around some laser cut letters that I made. I've never done that, and that's worked well. And it's kind of fun to experiment with those things that I haven't done before. And I've really, over the last couple of years, have kind of gotten away from tinkering and experimenting just because I've been so busy. And there's
it's
so good.
It's
much
forcing you to stretch.
Yeah. And there's so much value in
but every artist needs. You need to stretch.
Yeah. And so I just have this like renewed energy of I want to try new stuff and I want to bring in more different materials and colors and stuff into what I'm doing. I think like this, it feels like a pivot point for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think hearing you say that about like stretching with materials and, you know, specifically the heavy body acrylic, that is a textural aesthetic addition to something that you did, right? It's not I would assume, I mean, I don't know what the project is, mm-hmm. but I would assume that is an adjective around the thing that you made. And that's something I have a really hard time with, valuing enough to add in. Like I'll do, and we've talked about this a bunch of times, like the structural thing. Yes, it is. It is structurally what I wanted it to be, and that's enough. But you're enjoying the fact that you're taking additional time to add layers that are not structural, not necessary structural.
That's yeah, what I
mean, like necessary, but they make it better. And that's really cool to hear. That is exciting to you. That's something that I need to play with as well.
Yeah, and just playing around, it feels like you're adding another tool to the arsenal because you've done that before. Even if I have to go back and watch an old video to relearn how I did something, at least I've done that before. There's a little bit of that muscle memory. And it's just, there's a difference between like watching a video or reading a book and then actually doing it, because you have the library in your head of techniques. There's just a stronger, you're going to remember something that you've done as opposed to something that you watched or read before.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool, man. I'm glad to hear that it's going well. And I've been thinking about you because I know that it's coming up, and I know that I don't know, but I assume that it would feel like a whole lot, you know, to prepare for.
Yeah.
It's a bunch June of new 20th, stuff. I'm going to be at the Weaver. Event itself is a new thing for you, much less the work that you have to do for the event. So,
I'm going to be in Ohio on June 20th, so I'll see if I could steal away. I'm going to be in at the Weaver leather classes. So we'll see when and how, if there's a window where I can boogie out and come see you.
That would be amazing.
I forget what town a Weaver's in, but I think it looked as about 2 hour drive. But we'll see if we can figure it out when we're there.
All right.
Awesome. Well, Jimmy, what have you been up to?
Me?
Yeah. You're the
only
Jimmy.
Just as you spoke. Just as you spoke, I coughed. But I'm mute.
You in the hat? Yes, you.
Yeah. What have I been up to? Oh, Matt from Spark Cycle Works came and we installed a large horsepower electric motor with a large battery into my electric go-kart that I'm fabricating. That'll be ready. And that video will probably be out at the end of July because I like to incorporate the go-kart event in the end of those videos. So that'll be out after the go-kart event, which is July 11th in East Durham. So I've been working on the go-kart, fabricating everything, the whole front end from parts, just scrap metal that's been in the shop. I'm fabricating everything from scratch, which has been an education. I don't always trust my ability, but I just say, let's get a reference point. If it doesn't work, I'll go back and figure out how to make it work. Next up is the steering. I got the front end done, so now I have to figure out how to make that steer. So I'm working on that. But Matt had a window to come and do the electric. So Matt, if you're listening, thank you very much. I know he listens to the show, so it was great. He's so smart. He's unbelievably educated on all this stuff, which to me is a total mystery, electric cars. And Matt gave me a bit of an education, and there's an app on the phone where you could tell the motor to do certain things, like ramp up a certain way, like those electric motors.
Yeah, that was
going to
be my question.
There's an app, and in the app you could set all the parameters, all the ramping and this and that. It's just like a VFD, which I found very intriguing because I didn't know any of that. I thought you just connect it and that's it. So he put the app on my phone and went in the app and adjusted some of the parameters. Like, for instance, the electric motor, he made it so it has three modes. So it's every time you get back in it for the first time, if it hasn't, you turn it off and turn it back on, it's in mode one, which is slow, so that whoever gets in it, if it's not me, doesn't drive into a tree. And then mode two and three, obviously, progressively faster. And then the little push button to go in reverse, and going in reverse is super slow. So all those programmable modes.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was a great education. And so then I did that with him, and then I had to jump on. I'm making a set of airplane seats, just upholstered leather airplane seats.
You know, no big deal. Just some leather seats for
an airplane.
Really
simple. They're really simple. I basically made like two pillowcases that slide over two things, the back and the seat, but getting them to basically relate to the frame, because this isn't like an upholstered car seat. It's this thin little frame that goes in this little airplane that they're restoring at the aerodrome. I'm hoping to get over there today to be able to plop the seats in for a video clip. And also, to add context to the video by showing the airplane itself, it's in paint right now, so it's like covered in masking and stuff. Hopefully by the end of the day, I'll be able to get out there and take a picture of that, or at least a couple of video clips. So the leather seat's my next video, but it wasn't able to be done by this weekend. So it'll be out sometime, maybe this week. I'll just post it whenever it's ready. And just doing yard work, getting all my cars up and going, starting all the cars one at a time, finding out all the issues, all the mouse chewed wires and the dead batteries. You know, now
that sounds fun.
The frost is gone. Everything is running and driving, and nothing's giving me major problems. And tooling around at the graveyard house, as much as I don't show it online, there is stuff happening there. And I'm waiting on architectural plans, which is now a little too long that I've been waiting. Hopefully, Mike, you can get that done sooner than later. And that's it. I'm just tooling along. I'm waiting for the registration for the Cadillac. There's a full video on the Cadillac waiting to happen, but I want to end that video with the Cadillac being polished. So it'll be starting from the moment I saw it for the first time in 20 plus years, getting all the little fixes in and then taking it to my friend to be polished. So at the end, it'll be like a ta-da, and the car will be gleaming glowing. So any minute now, I'll get my registration. I use a guy in Albany called Tags and Titles, and I bring all the paperwork to him, and he goes and he argues with DMV if I'm missing a signature here or a form there. And he checks everything before he takes it. And he's like a DMV lawyer. And he seems to think there won't be any issues. So he's
taking a job.
He's dealing with that. So any minute now, he's going to call me and say, come get your license plates. And then I'll be in the clear. You know that in New York State, one of the biggest pain in the asses is getting your car inspected. And if you have one car, it's a real pain in the ass to get that car inspected. Imagine having 13 cars and every one of them needs to be inspected every year.
Imagine having 13 cars.
Yeah, that is the pain.
It's crazy, regardless of anything else.
By the way, I counted how many cars I have. I have 13 cars.
I figured.
Because everyone always asks me, I was like, I don't really know. I never counted. I think I have 13 cars.
Do they all run? I think that they all do.
They all run. Actually, 14 would be the Fleetwood, which was the parts car, which I'm just going to throw away. So that's 14. That every other car runs and drives. And almost all of them are insured and registered except for one.
Do you have a organization for all the keys?
I just leave the keys in it. All the keys. So when my dad passed away, we never found the keys to his car. Like one of his cars, we have no idea. We never found the keys. We just gave the car away with no keys. Why? I don't know. Cause it was his daily driver. Did he swallow the keys before he died? Like nobody knows where they went to the keys. So because of that, like whenever my brother or my sister around or Rachel, I'd be like, okay, the keys to this are here, the keys to that here. The keys to all my cars are just stuck in the ignition for the pretty much mostly every one of them.
I would like to see a Jimmy DiResta version of a keyboard, like you would see like a used car dealership.
That's actually a really good idea because I do need that. I have like random key hooks, like nails sticking out of the cupboard walls. And this is keys and spare keys. I have spare keys to cars I don't own anymore. Because I might have given the car away with the key in the ignition and then the spare keys hanging in the cupboard. So I do have to organize that. But and now that the spring is here, yesterday my local friend, my local guys, they do everything for me. These guys are amazing. And they came over yesterday. I've been really lending them equipment. They come and borrow my backhoe once in a while. And they just showed up yesterday because they've been meaning to trim the trees. I have a lot of trees on the edge of my property that could either fall into the street or fall into the house. And they came yesterday with a crew of guys and they cut up a bunch of trees that were in need of being taken down. So they cut down two trees and I turned those two trees into 10-foot logs. So I have a bunch of logs to go to the sawmill with. So that's exciting. I'll be playing with my sawmill coming up soon. And yeah. And people are asking about we're doing this everyday carry thing. That's going to probably, you'll see more details in the ability to buy this maybe in a video in 2 weeks. So some people are asking about that. And I've been working on the packaging for that. Simple. It's not too complicated. And I don't know. Now that spring is here, just there's so many projects around the property. For instance, a friend of mine was leaving the house during the winter and slid on the ice and crashed my gate. The gate that I made in a video about 4 years ago. And so I had to take the gate off with the tractor, take it back to the shop, cut it apart, put it back together, and then hang it back up. So that was like 4-hour window on Memorial Day. That was fun. No video. No one needs a video of a bent fence getting fixed. And stuff like that. And I've just been busy with a lot of house stuff, keeping the grounds clean. And I got 24 baby chickens. Again, because my flock is down to about 4 laying hens. They slowly disappear. And, yeah.
Where did they go?
I went into the coop yesterday and just randomly just walked into the coop and there was this huge black crow in the coop because the door was open because it's the daytime. And he panicked. He's like, oh my God. Human. And he like flew into the
Jimmy
fence.
Jimmy DiResta.
Flew into the fence. He kept like hitting the fence like, and I'm like, it was incredible. He was like 24 inches like across, like, you know, beak to feet, beak to tail. He was huge. Like you see these things flying, but like when you're like 2 feet away from them, you couldn't believe. So it was either a black raven or a black crow, which there's plenty of floating around here. And I leave eggs on the fence for them and they come up to the eggs and they poke a hole in it with their beak and they carry the whole, like a whole egg from a chicken. Their eggs are obviously smaller, but they'll poke a hole with their beak and stick their beak right in the hole and then carry the egg away. I filmed them. I set up a film and It is so smart. So it's like, I came in there. He's like, oh boy, he's here. He found me. I think he's going in there and eating the bird food. But I'm trying to make friends with the ravens and the crows. I'll tell you more about that if we develop a friendship, if I get their emails and stuff. But no, that's it. Just a lot of little of everything. Little of everything.
What's your sleep schedule?
The other day, I went to sleep early and I woke up and my phone congratulated me. It's like, congratulations, you finally got a full night's sleep.
You sleep like a human now.
Yeah, it really did. I woke up and it's like, congratulations, you finally got like a decent, it said some word that it was like, you got a decent sleep. I sleep about 5 hours a night. I go to sleep at about 2 and get up at about 7:38. Give or take. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But when it's like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep tonight and I'm going to get like 8 hours, I will go to sleep at midnight and wake up at 5 a.m. Like my eyes will open up. So it's like I'm programmed to sleep 5 hours pretty much on the nose. When I'm away, if I'm in a hotel, if we go to sleep, whatever time we go to sleep, I wake up exactly 5 hours later. That's it.
Not me. I can sleep.
This is, I say it all the time. I wish you didn't have to eat and I wish you didn't have to sleep. Those are two things that just slow down productivity.
I agree with the sleep thing. I think it is really unfortunate that we require so much sleep.
Yeah. You know,
like it just within our days, it feels like a very large percentage that we, some of us at least, need to sleep.
You know, with all the little drips and drabs of education that come through Instagram, although like, you know, besides the salacious weird stuff in the news, but there was a clip the other day, I guess it's ADHD people. They procrastinate going to sleep because that's the most productive few hours between like midnight and 2 or 3 in the morning. And there was, it could be just made up AI slop, but it seems like, oh, that I'm justified in not going to sleep for those few hours.
I've heard similar things about parents because, like, you know, you spend so much of your day caring for somebody and you intentionally decide to put yourself like last. And so by the time kids get to bed, even though you're exhausted, you're like, now's my time. So I'm going to stay up and be productive for a couple hours. And it usually is just like, you should just go to sleep. That would be better for you. But Same thing is there.
I find myself, this could be a topic, I find myself looking for stretches of time where I don't have to interact with people. And so if I have to see this person for this obligation, whether I'm like working on this retail shop in town, so occasionally I haven't had to do anything for them that requires a video or that is could be a video, so I haven't shown or talked about any of it. But like when I go and see these guys, they're great guys and they're very, very creative guys and they're inspiring me in many ways. When I go and see those guys, I'm like, okay, I got 3 hours. I don't have to talk to anybody. I'm like, let me go do this. And then like once those 3 hours up, I got to go meet somebody at the graveyard house. I'm like, okay, that's done. Now I got 2 hours. I don't have to talk to anybody. Like, okay, cool. Like last night, for instance, I turned on the CNC machine. I did a friend a favor and I CNC'd out this board. It took 4 hours. So for those 4 hours, I had to babysit the CNC machine. And anytime anybody called me, I'm like, yeah, I'm at the CNC machine. I can't talk. I spend most of my time trying to put out fires and those fires are me interacting with other people. I find that all day long. Like, okay, let me.
What are all these fires? Is it just people working on houses and cars and
just
and
people popping, you know, and then people, I don't go to my downtown shop anymore. Me and Rob now call it the downtown shop. I don't go to the downtown shop anymore because anybody sees my car. They're like, hey, what's going on? Where you been? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Blah, blah, blah.
But you have 13 cars. Why don't you just drive a different car to the shop?
Well, people know.
They all say Duresta on the tailgate. That's true. Some point. Yeah. Yeah.
There is a giant truck. My landlord's trying to sell this giant truck. It's like a huge dump truck. So when I park at my shop now, I park behind the dump truck and nobody sees me. No one knows I'm there.
Wow.
So like I'll pull in and pull right next to the dump truck. And if you drive by, you can't see anything behind the dump truck. So people won't know. But if it's at dusk and the lights are on, they'll know. So, and then they'll poke in the driveway a little bit and then they'll see my car behind the dump truck. But with the lights are on, that's also a dead giveaway. I do have these blinders that come down, but you could see if somebody's in there at night, you could see light leaks through the building because the building's a little beat up. So it's not always easy to hide.
There's, this is totally I shouldn't even be telling this, but there's a massage parlor, a couple roads down in a major shopping area. And it's in this like tiny little mini mall thing. And it's called Best Massage, which is just the perfect name. And it's in a parking lot with some other buildings, but in front of the Best Massage parlor, there's this little, like in the parking lot, there's this little like lattice fence. So you can park on the other side of the fence. And it's like, is that so people don't see your car parked there? Because I can still see your car parked there.
Yeah. It husband parking is. Only.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would assume.
Yeah.
So.
That's funny. So that's it. I mean, I spend most of my days just putting out fires, and that's me being able to find stretches of time alone. And if I do find myself, okay, I got that's done. Okay, I have a window. Let me go throw four pieces of clay on the wheel, and then I do that. Or let me go and start the steering on the go-kart. Let me go do that.
Are you jumping
around a lot.
So you're okay with the task switching? I don't do so well with that. I need to do one thing and then finish one thing before.
I mean, I've trained myself to be able to do that. That's like, I gotta spend a few hours on this. I feel better at the end of the day knowing I moved three projects along a little bit versus spending all my day on one thing and those other two things got neglected. It's all just, the schedule obviously ebbs and flows and grows and shrinks. But I look right now at my schedule. I have all of June to work on the go-kart, and I know that it's not going to be a solid schedule on the go-kart, but I know that in 4 weeks, I'll definitely get it done. And then I still have two more weeks into July 11th. I have 11 days to finish it. And I know I'm going to have plenty of time. So I'll look at that and I'll slow track that right now, but I'll begin to fast track it as the month goes. And then,
but you're getting all of the mechanical part of it done, right? And so you'll get to use June for the aesthetics, the cool
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. It's exactly what I just was telling somebody last night. Like, once I get the steering done, then I have plenty of time to design the shell. And the shell I'm going to design with long strips of wire or long strips of wooden sticks that I could, just like building a boat where I could lay out this small framework to develop what will be the skin and the shell. And I could really step back and develop a nice sleek look with long strips of sticks all CA glued or wired to zip tied together. And then that'll be my model of my shell. And then on top of that, I'll make the sheet metal parts. And then that's definitely a long process and a lot of decision making, aesthetic decision making. That'll be definitely I'm looking forward to that. That's the real meat and potatoes of the design, like making all this other stuff. It's like, okay, this has to get done. I definitely need brakes. I definitely need steering. You know, this like there's all.
Are you doing one video for this, or are you breaking up those different?
I'll do one video. I'll just do one video.
You editing along the way, or are you just gonna have 16 hours of footage to go through?
No, well, I will eventually. I haven't yet, but I will eventually start the edit. Start throwing pieces together. I was thinking last night, I have a year's worth of video on the tow truck. I have right now about 2 months worth of video on the Cadillac. And I have those two videos just sitting there waiting to be turned into a story. There's a couple things like on the tow truck, I'm trying to fix the hydraulics. And once I fix the hydraulics, I'll consider it done because I will have fixed all the problems. And then I could call that complete. But I haven't started editing either of those. And then they're all in sequential order as I solve the problem. So it's easy to throw a rough cut together. I just dump everything in and I typically shoot pretty tight too. This is off this topic, but whenever I shoot stuff like this, I try and shoot really tight. So every time I throw it all in the timeline, I only have a little bit of editing to do or a little bit of speeding up to do here and there. If you're new to YouTube or you're new to shooting videos, the biggest mistake people do is they run the camera for hours so they don't miss the good stuff. You got to like make the good stuff and then shut your camera off. But that comes with experience because I find people, they'll call me, they go, I have like 40 hours of me making a table. I'm like, you probably only should have shot two.
Yeah.
It would make your life easier.
In a full day of shooting, I want less than an hour of footage.
Yeah. I've been in people's studios when they're shooting and we're hanging out talking and whatever. And like, I'm like, yeah, I go, you know, your camera's on. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. I leave it on. I'm like, what? Yeah. Why? you don't need any of this. It just takes up room on your hard drive. Well, I don't want to miss something. I'm like, that's completely unnecessary.
Well, and I mean, I guess also, you know, it depends on what your editing workflow is and like what your storage workflow is. Like maybe that's not a big deal. For me, I try to keep everything. So the more unnecessary stuff I have, the more I have to either go through and delete, get rid of, or just my storage is ridiculous. So yeah, I'm with you.
When you're on a TV show, for some reason, sometimes the cameras are just running. It makes no sense to me. I don't know. Yeah. There's this one like, oh yeah, it's running. And you see like the time code spinning by, and not necessarily because sometimes they'll keep time code for the day. So it's like the time of day time code. So it's always running whether the camera's on or off. It just picks it up when you turn the camera on. But sometimes the cameras are just running. You walk by a camera and it says it's recording. I'm like, why? It makes no sense to me. But it might be to keep in sync with other cameras that are actually filming something. I don't know. I never really understood that.
I don't have any TV experience, but the show that I did those two episodes of, which I still haven't heard anything about. I don't know what's going on with that. They had so many cameras. There were at least four separate cameras happening all the time. And, you know, we shot for several days. It wasn't like a TV show where you're shooting an episode a week for several weeks or anything, but it was just, it seemed like so much footage for anybody to go through. And because they were all four shooting all day long, they would split up and do B-roll in places and they would do interviews here and then, you know, cross-cut interviews. So you have like two angles on it so you can cut back and forth. I can't imagine having to go through that. And there's one guy that edits all of it. So he's got to watch all of it, you know, and then manage it. But gosh, it's crazy. For me, if you can't tell, I'm still sick.
Yeah.
not actually sick. I just can't get rid of this cough. It's like right there. I can feel it. If I could reach in my throat and grab it and throw it away, that would be awesome. But I can't. And so I've just been coughing nonstop. I haven't slept a whole lot because I wake up in the middle of the night coughing and that type of stuff. So that's been kind of a drag. But outside of that, it's been a really good week, but a really kind of tiring week. It's been... So my oldest graduated from high school this past weekend. And like my father-in-law was in town. We had some really good friends from Savannah for the graduation to come visit. And they stayed with some other friends. But just having a lot of people around and having a lot of stuff to go to. And we had a grad party for him here on Sunday. So we had a whole bunch of people here. And it was all great, like good stuff. But it's been just kind of nonstop, you know, for several days.
I had people at the house all weekend and you can't get anything done really when people are around.
Oh yeah. No,
I'll keep saying like, I got to get something from the shop and I'll go to the shop and work for an hour and come back up with that. That's what I did over the weekend. We had two house guests.
I should do that. I don't know if I can get away with that, but yeah. So it's been good, but really, you know, kind of tiring and busy and, a lot of change just with him graduating and nothing's actually changed yet, but I can tell that things are changing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of strange. And then sitting around having conversations with a bunch of other parents whose kids also graduated. And we're like talking about the realities of college and military service and all of the things that are next and how we set them up and pay for them and how we, you know, just like, oh, well, this is a lot and everybody's going through it. It's not just me. It's, you know, it's a lot of stuff, but so I've been mostly doing that. But yesterday I was able to start on, probably the last project before I start traveling. I may be able to get in another one, but it was not the Carmagia like I said it would be. I'm still putting it off. The other day, I when I had time before everybody got here, I had time to go work on the Ghia. And I was like, I can get started today and then I'll pick it up next week. And I legitimately sat there and said, like, I really need to go work on the Ghia. And I really don't want to go work on the Ghia. And it was like, I had to kind of have a conversation with myself about, like, you need to go do this. And I just don't want to. I mean, I will. I do want to, but like, I don't want to do it right now. It's not like there's no fire. There's no like draw in the moment to go do that little bit of metal work that has to be done. And so I just decided, if I don't feel it, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to like, it's still going to be there mm-hmm. whenever I come back. So, you know, I may try to do that before I leave if I can wrap up this next thing, but I don't know. But anyway, it was just kind of a weird thing to like.
It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And it probably would be fun if I did it. Just, and it would feel good to have it done, to have that piece moved ahead, you know? So I recognize that, but in the moment I was just like, I just don't want to. So anyway, I didn't. But the thing I'm working on now is actually really simple, but I think is kind of, I think it would be useful for a lot of people. And I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody do it. So, you know, the metal shelves that everybody gets, they're just like metal bars on the sides, and then you snap in like a metal cross piece and then lay in a shelf. You know, mm-hmm. just like metal shelving you get from Home
Depot. Like U-line, gray with wood?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. and there's a bunch of different companies, and they're all pretty similar. The uprights have keyholes in them, and you snap things in across. So I've got a couple of these. I've got a bunch of them, but I've got a couple of them in my 3D printer room, my Tron room. And instead of a shelf, I have them next to each other, and then have a tabletop sitting across them. And so that's the kind of like printer bench that's behind me when I shoot those videos. It's the backdrop. And the stuff on these shelves, so they're about 30 inches tall, 48 inches wide, and there's two of them. And it's just storage for, it's like all 3D printing supplies and shipping supplies and stuff like that. And so when I was putting that room together, I just like, I got to cover this up. I need this to look black so that you can't see it. So I just took some black fabric I had, didn't even cut it to size. I just like took little binder clips and clipped it up underneath the tabletop just to cover it. And I left it like that. And it's been fine. But every time I go down there to get something, it's like I have this heavy drape that drags on the floor that I have to kind of like pick up and reach in. And so I always think like, oh, I should do some cool sliding something, you know. Never been able to come up with a good idea. And so I finally realized everybody has these shelves, and they're always full of storage stuff, which is typically hard to look at. So why not make a thing that you could just put on the front of any of them and turn shelves into a cabinet, basically. And so it's a really simple face frame with, it's like an L-shaped frame. So there's a face frame, and then there's a piece that goes back. And then in that piece that goes back, I added some dados so you can put sliding panel doors in there. And so you can take this whole thing, put in a couple screws on the back of it that will fit in the keyholes of the uprights, and you can just drop it in place. And now instead of ugly shelves, you have whatever you want it to look like. You know, you've got two big doors that you can slide back and forth. And so I'm putting that together, and it's super easy. I'm using a table saw to rip some pieces and brad nail them together. You know, it's not complicated. And it almost feels way too simple to make a video about. And I think that's why I didn't do it for a while. But then once I realized that, like, everybody has these shelves, that's the reason to do it. Not because mm-hmm. it's complicated or interesting even, but everybody has this. And everybody, you know, could probably benefit from not having to look at their like trash on the shelf. So
that's actually a great idea, because I have two of those floating around.
Oh man, I have so many of them. Like, I have a whole island in my shop that is, I guess it's five units. So they're two back to back, and then one on the end. And I pointed that out in the video that like I have this one and this one and this one and this one and this one. And then I started thinking about what it would look like, what that island would look like if it were all covered. And I'm like, oh, wow, that would like change the aesthetic of the shop completely. And it'd be really easy to do. It's just some 1x4s and panels stuff. So anyway, that's what I'm working on, trying to get that knocked out. And of course, I'm going to overcomplicate it with LEDs and acrylic and laser, whatever. That's me. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of, so I went to buy the panels that I'm going to do for this are going to be, I was going to get acrylic panels, and then I'll go ahead and spoil it. My plan is to put LED strips on the back, inside, behind the, like on the track where the doors slide. I'm going to take these acrylic panels, paint them black, and then laser cut or laser etch a pattern in the front that will just basically laser through the paint into the acrylic a little bit. So then when it's backlit or top lit or whatever, mm-hmm. all of those little details will get a little bit of light. And then if you animate the light, then all of those details should like shimmer and move and stuff. So I bought these panels, got them home, didn't really think about it. I just got them at Menards, and I bought polycarbonate instead of acrylic, which was cheaper. I think that's why I did it. Turns out you're not really supposed to laser polycarbonate. You can, but it produces some nasty gases and stuff. And so I'm trying to decide whether I return those and get acrylic or whether I just mention the consideration in the video and say, I'm going to do it anyway because I have good filtration. I'm not going to smell any of this stuff. It's going to go outside. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Like, if you do something dangerous, should you just talk about it or not do it?
I'll tell you what I've done.
Well, I don't know if I have a suggestion for that, but I will say not only is it toxic, but it can fog up your mirrors and the lens because it creates a different type of smoke.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done that. I was cutting something and I realized I needed it done because I promised some project to somebody. I can't remember what it was, a sign or something. So I needed it done, so I risked having the fume, but the danger. So I opened both doors in my barn, which just makes the wind blow through, and I hit start and I ran out. up to the house, and I just kind of hung back until I finished. I heard the machine finish. Then I stayed out at the shop for 15 minutes. And then I go, and then like you still have like a little bit of taste in the air of like, wow, I'm so glad I'm not dead because that definitely would have probably killed me. It creates some sort of deadly gas. I forget what it was. And I think that's PVC. Is it PVC you can't cut?
PVC is very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, it was some PVC that I was cutting, and but I needed the stuff done. It cuts great, but the fume is deadly. So I just hit start and ran out of the shop. I did that a couple times that night. It was a summer night. It was nice out, so I was okay. But yeah, you got to be careful. I'm imagine there's some horror stories that people don't know any better.
Yeah, I mean, the alternative, and it's much harder, but to do it on the CNC.
I don't have a CNC. Yep.
Oh,
I did think about that, but. Mm-hmm. I don't have one. And I could get Andy Bird or somebody to do it for me, but, or I could just take it back and get acrylic. It was like a dollar more a sheet. I mean, I just kind of picked it up without really even thinking about it. I was looking for a specific size, and I think that was actually probably the thing. I was trying to not buy it, you know, the closest to the actual size that I need because I was going to have to cut it, and I didn't want to just buy a bunch of waste. So that was probably the bigger thing.
Anyway. I do this thing where, you know, typically you on the table saw, if the piece is longer than the depth, then you must use some sort of like crosscut table and not the fence. But once in a while, because I will make one of those cuts. We call them illegal cuts, but I don't show it on camera or it's so close you can't see. But I know what I'm doing. I have grippy things that's pushing down and up against the fence. I know 100% it is not going to bind and come back at me, but I just choose to not show it on camera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I typically will try to set the angle of the camera down to where you can't see the
dangerous
the part. Width longer than the length, you know, but
if I cut something wider than longer, I rush to get to the riving knife. Once you get, even though it's shorter, I mean, it's still obviously dangerous, but once you get the cut that you're making, once it gets up to the riving knife, you're in the safe zone. Safer than, but you shouldn't do it to begin with, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But once you get to the riving knife, so whenever I'm cutting something, say if it's like 12 inches wide and only like 4 inches deep or 6 inches deep, I'll rush, like I press against the fence really hard and I kind of go quickest to get to the riving knife and then I'm in the safety zone and then I could relax. Because it's right before the riving knife is when you'll get a bind and shoot around in a danger, danger, danger. But don't do it to begin with.
Yeah, yeah, if you can avoid it.
There was an HGTV show years ago, and I was only paying attention because my show was on at the same time 20 years ago. And these brothers would find garbage on the street and fix it. I think they were called the Garbage Brothers or the Trash Brothers or something. Some people will remember the show. And they'd fix these things and then turn things into garbage. People confused us because it was two brothers. It was garbage.
They would turn things into garbage?
No. Well, yes, exactly. That's exactly what they did. That was everyone's opinion of the show.
But I
was watching it and they were cutting 2x4s on the table saw against the fence.
And I
told my producer, I'm like, you know, that's like completely illegal as far as woodworking goes. They're like, well, it's up now. It doesn't matter now. They were cutting like 24-inch 2x4s or 20-inch 2x4s against the fence on the table saw. Big no-no.
Yeah.
No cool. one got hurt.
Well, we had a kind of topic. And I wrote down what is the best catalyst. So there's a lot of things that can spark, you know, your interest and your motivation. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Motivation to start on a project or to move ahead, mm-hmm. or to make progress or whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. But like for each of you, what is the thing? And there are a lot of reasons, a lot of things that can be catalysts. We were kind of joking about, you know, having to pay bills. That's a catalyst.
Yeah,
having to,
deadline.
You know, being under a deadline or whatever. But what's like the best thing for you? The best spark, motivation, things start moving like for each
other. I was saying how sometimes you have to force yourself onto a project. You know you have to get it done because of an obligation, either with a client or with a advertiser or just a deadline, a general deadline, you know, the loose agreement you make with your audience that you're going to get a video done on a particular time. You have to force yourself on a project, even though you don't want to do it. But when you get out there and you start having some success, you're like, oh, I'm really glad I did this. Because prior to that, you can't see the good in the project. You can't see. And of course, I'm going to repeat myself for the millionth time. It is always the one thing that's holding you back. And once you get past that one thing that's holding you back, then the project tends to flow a little bit. And then there'll be, if it's a big project, like for instance, this go-kart I'm making, there's going to be a lot of holdups. There's going to be a lot of little hiccups and, you know, peas under the mattress that you're going to be like, ugh, how am I going to do this? How am I going to relate this shape to that shape? How am I going to make this? How am I going to make this mechanical thing do this mechanical thing when that mechanical thing happens? There's a lot of those problems to solve. But I think the most important thing is if you don't have that natural driving energy to jump into it or get out there and do it in the shop or build that building, whatever it is, I think you really have to just force yourself. You have to say, I got to find it. So you have to find it by working. And that's a lot of things. People look for that before they start working and nothing gets done. You see all these like half done projects, you know, all the house, all the husbands that have the to-do list they don't do is because they're looking for that spark of motivation before they get started. You know, the answers are in the work. You got to do the physical work to get those.
That's good.
To find that motivation.
In the work.
So once you get, it's like pushing a car down the hill before it started. You see, it's like push starting a car. You got to push start your motivation in some cases. So that really, I have to remind myself of that concept. Like you have to push start yourself before it happens naturally. People are always like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm like, when are you going to do it? Because you haven't started doing anything yet. Oh, it's going to happen. Waiting for that spark of motivation. You know, my old joke is I'm finally ready to be perfect. Whereas like finding the perfection in the work, finding the answers in the physical work, I think is really important to remember. Or, you know, it's like getting on the treadmill. You don't want to get on the treadmill, but once you're on the treadmill and you're doing it, you're like, I'm awesome. I really know how to do these things. But 10 minutes ago, you would have rather sat and watched TV and potato chips any given moment.
But, David, what about you?
Jealousy. I think jealousy is a big spark motivator for me. When I see somebody else doing something that is inspiring, I'm like, I wish I had that skill. That is so awesome. And that is the thing that probably forces me to experiment more than anything else. And it's one of the good things of social media is I'm very particular about who I follow. I want to follow art stuff. I want to follow creative stuff, and friends who do cool things. And so when I see something on Instagram or Pinterest, I'm like, how can I bring that in? That is so cool. How can I bring that into my work? And even more powerful than seeing something on your computer is actually just getting out and seeing physical stuff. Like when I go to, you know, we're like an hour away from the Henry Ford Museum. That place is just it's just a pool of inspiration for cool stuff. And we have an amazing art museum here. Just going to the antique mall or the Goodwill, just seeing something that sparks a new idea that I would not have thought of just sitting and sketching and drawing in my home. It's getting out and looking at physical things.
Hmm.
Yeah, I like that idea of being jealous of somebody else or something. Like, I can do that. I can make it.
See, it's funny.
$10? Like, I can make this.
I feel that. I know what you're saying, but when I see somebody else do something really awesome, I'm like, man, I wish I had thought of that. But now that I've seen somebody else do it, I'm not going to go anywhere near that idea.
The thing is, everything is a remix.
Yeah.
And so all, you know, no ideas are original anymore. So you're just taking somebody else's idea and then you're slapping Bob on top of it. And so then it's your own. And, you know, as long as it's different enough, it's now you own that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a hard time. I do that. I 100% do that. Like I'm not, but I also have a hard time actively doing that. Like I'll see somebody do something really cool and be like, oh man, now I can't go anywhere in the sphere of that idea or it's going to seem like I'm copying the idea. And then eventually, you know, I get far enough away from that moment and I can maybe come up with my own version or something. But I think for me, I think there's several things that will make me that are kind of like the flashpoint, you know, for me to start doing something. But I think it's clarity for the most part. I think I can have like a good idea around a really blurry, like it would be cool if there was this and it's kind of blurry, right? And I know what the end goal would be, but between the it would be cool if and the end goal, it's just this cloud. And so I think when I get really excited about something is when either I've actively or subconsciously, my brain makes a connection that says like, this is the clear part that connects the beginning of your idea to the end thing that you actually want it to be. And whether that's a material or a mechanism or a, you know, whatever. But I think that even if it's not 100% clear and completely planned out, the connective tissue existing to know that, oh, there is actually a path to get from the rough idea to the final thing, and it's enough for me to move on. That's like, okay, now I have to do it because there's actually a path. It's not just a, you know, like a dream of getting to a thing that, cause I mean, like for instance, you know, we've talked in the past about me building the giant dead robot in the woods. And that's like the beginning of that idea and the kind of mental picture I have for it is really cool. And I think having it exist in the woods and being able to walk up to it and look up above you to the eyes of a dead robot would be so cool. But the in-between of what is it made out of? How is it movable? Like, do I have to build it in pieces and truck it in, or do I build it in place? You know, and all of the mechanics of like the logistics, not the mechanics, the logistics of actually getting from that first thing to the last thing. It's not clear yet. It's still, and I think about it and I try to figure it out, but it is still really, really blurry. And so I think there's probably going to come a point while I'm asleep or something where my brain goes, oh, you have to 3D print this part and fiberglass all the wood on this part. And that's how you get it together and get it in place. And then I'm going to be like, okay, now we're building a robot. You know,
that's a perfect example of where I'm saying sometimes you have to start the physical to get to the answers. Even if let's say you spend 3 hours starting this project, it'll either give you the exact thing you're not supposed to do, or it's going to give you the exact path you do. Seriously. Yeah. So if you say these 3 hours, I'm going to just physically start doing this project, I'm either going to know exactly where I'm not going, or I'm going to have a better path, or I'm going to be somewhere in between. And that's why sometimes I do that. I had it with this go-kart. I don't know. I'm afraid to start the frame. Is it going to be too short? Is it going to be too skinny? Is it going to be too wide? I'm building in space. I don't know anything. I have no reference. I don't have one of these mini go-karts sitting around, these mini racers. I see them on Facebook Market. And my inspiration is to do a 1920s mini racer and with open wheels. I'm like, let me build the frame. If I have to, I'll extend it. If I need to, I'll shorten it. If I have to, I'll widen it. Let me just get started. Let me put the axle in. The axle's 4 feet long right now. I don't know how wide it really needs to be. I'll just leave it 4 feet until I have to cut it once I know how wide the front end's going to be. So all these things, I just kept leaving answers to be answered down the road, but just to get started and push in the right direction. Like right now, I'm at a point now where I feel like I need to make it about 4 inches longer. I'm going to hold off because the shorter, the cuter. So I might try and leave it shorter, but my knees will be bent. But that's okay. I could also make the floor pan dip down so the floor pan goes below the axle, below the frame. So there's all these answers that are coming to me as I work. But the mystery of not knowing is keeping me from getting started.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I probably should start.
Even if you make one that's, even if you make a model.
Yeah.
This whole conversation is making me think, wouldn't it be cool to have the actual Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz in my woods? So that when the hunters see him in October, they'll be like, what the? Have like the Tin Man like rusted, like with an axe in his hand. So now you want to make a robot. I want to make a Tin Man.
There you go.
That's kind of the theme of the property is the Tin Man. And to have him stuck out in the woods, that would be really cool. But yeah, even if you made one that was a quarter scale.
Mm-hmm.
To get the ball rolling with similar materials, just so you have a theme or a comfort zone to start to develop a comfort with certain materials.
Yeah. And I think in my case, it's going to be an interesting, whenever I get to it, an interesting like iterative process for a little bit in what you're talking about, figuring out the right materials, but also figuring out the design to make the most of the materials and then the pose to make the most of the design, you know? So I think it'll probably be like, I'll have to adjust one for the other and then the other for the other. And, I mean, I have a pose for it, you know, just like it fell asleep up against a tree, but even that could be a few different things. And then there's like how do you get the leg to stand up like its knee is bent, but one leg out? And the design for the robot has to account for the fact that it has hip joints and knees and ankles that have to be bent in the right way to have one leg out and one leg up, you know, stuff like that. So I have spent a lot of time thinking about this. I just have not had that kind of breakthrough yet. But
make a mini diorama of where it would be in the woods, like do like a LiDAR scan of where it would be. The trees and stuff, 3D printed trees. Come on, Bob, let's get this going.
Well, I actually would like to figure it out so that I can start it in the winter, because I think doing it, getting it built before spring so that it is in place and not putting the video out, but getting it built and then letting spring happen to it. Mm-hmm. Because out there, everything dies. Everything gets, you know, in the winter, everything just
gets. Watch it come back to life.
Yeah. And then all the stuff just grow up over it as everything's coming back to life. It'd be so cool. So I want to do that. And also there's no ticks in the winter. That'd be cool because there's a lot of ticks out there.
There's lots of ticks now for some reason.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this, like catalysts or any other ones that are important to you that you see that are, you know, make things happen for you?
Well, Dave, you said before we got started, materials are a big Kickstarter. If you find, in the leather shop, a beautiful piece of material, a beautiful piece of leather I had wrapped. I'm like, okay, I'm way past not worrying about ruining anything. Well, like an empty page in a notebook. I'm way past that. I'm a seasoned professional. I could look at a piece of leather and go, I'm going to cut it right here. I'm going to get rid of that. That doesn't need to be there. This scar is going to be right in the middle of my bag, you know, so I could really look at a piece. So that's a really good motivator. And then of course, Dave, you mentioned machinery. If you get a new piece of equipment, whether it's a new piece of CNC equipment or a laser or even just an antique machine, that'll really get you motivated too.
Yeah. Recently I was watching, a BM Sculptures video and he got this Arbortech chisel carver out, And I didn't know that ArborTech made that. And I saw that and I'm like, I have to have that. I don't know what I'm
working on that too. It's great.
I don't know what I need this for, but I definitely need it. And I got it and I've been using it recently. And it's just, it's motivating to just have a new tool. I mean, you don't always have to spend money to be motivated, but sometimes it definitely works. And it goes back to like getting a new guitar or a keyboard or whatever. You instantly write a new song and it just opens up a whole world of possibilities.
Yeah. I just got my pottery wheel about 2 or 3 weeks ago now, at least at this point. And as soon as I unwrapped it, I plugged it in and I threw a piece of clay on it immediately. And it was really fun. And I actually I posted last night, but I made about 20 pieces, maybe more. I didn't even count. I made about 20, 25 pieces on the wheel since I got it. And I finally glazed and fired all those parts. And that's what this is. And all in this theme of white with a blue edge, just playing around with some country inspired stoneware. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's something just so satisfying.
No video, by the way, because nobody watches videos made in pottery. Like every, so I'm like, unless I make like nuclear fusion, I'm probably not going to do very many pottery videos because it is like nobody cares about watching pottery videos. Instagram seems to do well with really professional, good, skilled potters, but no one wants to see Jimmy DiResta do pottery, at least not on his YouTube channel.
I do. But well, I thank get it.
You. I'll send you the clip. I'll just send you a clip from my phone to phone. We'll get one view.
There's also something really fun about getting a new tool and not knowing how to use it. I mean, talking in a safe way, but just like going at it, getting a new pottery wheel and just using it without looking up instructions or whatever and just diving in and getting to know it. There's something inspiring about that process.
Mm-hmm. The other day, I did a bunch of stuff on and there was clay everywhere and splatter. And so I have a garden hose that comes into the shop. It's right near the shop. So I brought the garden hose in and I sprayed everything off. And then I got sat down to trim other pieces and I stepped on the pedal and nothing happened. I was like, oh my God, I just blew out the fuse by like garden hosing off my whole pottery wheel. Mm. I was like, I didn't know that was possible. I was like, I just ruined $2,000 pottery wheel by garden hosing it. But somewhere along the process, I had like flipped the switch to the middle position, which is off because you could flip it forward or backward. I didn't realize that. So I panicked for a second. I'm like, here I am being so confident that the water's not going to ruin it. But somehow in that process, I flipped the switch to basically off, which is the middle position. So I had a panic for a minute. I didn't break it.
But you didn't ruin it. That would have been a bummer.
Yeah. I pictured myself taking apart the electronics and being like, okay, where is the problem? But I didn't have to.
And then you would have thrown it away and ordered another one.
Probably. I would have put it on the curb.
Cool. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting the show, for helping us do this and continue to get together after 11 years or 300 years or however long we've been doing this. Really grateful for the support, everybody over there at Patreon, but especially our top supporters because they go above and beyond. That's Works by Solo, Tinius Space Industries, The New Janky Workshop, Scott, a Dad-It-Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Master of None, Jim from Wiser Bees, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also, our newest patron, Casey. Hey, Casey McCormick. Thanks for hopping on and supporting us. Everybody gets the after show, no matter what level or how long you've been supporting, none of that. Any support gets you the after show, which is a separate podcast feed that you can only get through Patreon. There's also links there for the video after show if you want to watch it on YouTube. And you get that by going to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at any level, and it's yours. And we appreciate it very much. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
Anything? Yes, I will go. So this one, I'm bringing it up here. So it is a local buddy, artist of mine called Acme Supply Company. And he's got a YouTube channel of 5,000 subscribers and he needs more. His latest one is he took a toolbox and he made it look old and rusty. And the interesting thing about the video is he took this toolbox and it didn't fit on the shelf. It's a, I believe it's a Harbor Freight toolbox, and he cut it down and then put it all back together. And it's so much work. And then taking the finish and making it look like rust is coming through and finishing it. And it was just a really cool process. And it was so much work, and it was all worth it because the payoff was really good at the end. So
cool.
My buddy Tony.
Check that out.
You're going to throw that in the chat. I'd like to watch that.
Okay.
And I have the Ocean Gate is worse than you thought. It's just a basically a Monday morning quarterback of the Ocean Gate Titan that exploded underwater. And it's a channel where it's called the, how would you say that, Bob? Did you see that? It says the Taro Fool. The Taro Fool, that's the name of the channel. It just popped up on me because I do watch a lot of the Ocean Gate stuff.
It just shows it. Oh, Taro Fool. Yeah, I mean, channel's called The Fool. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and this guy goes over some of that type of stuff, type of like Monday morning quarterbacking of things that have gone completely wrong. And just interesting. There's lots of intimate conversations about the Titan with the guy that was the head of the company that you really haven't seen yet. So it's just a lot of insight into like these guys going down a dark road and everybody wanting them. Like, carbon fiber is not good under the ocean. And he's like, no, I think it's going to be fine. And they kept going down deeper and deeper and deeper. But the various test vessels they were testing, everybody was telling them, okay, it's okay this time, but you've weakened the structure by going down. It's like if you had a plastic cup and you wrinkle it a little bit every day, on day 20, it's just going to break through the sides. And that's basically what this Titan was. They went down several times, and every time they went down, the pressure on it was compromising it for the next visit. And they never went down as deep as the Titanic until the day of the Titanic, which is crazy.
Huh.
And they lost contact with them for 8 hours before they ever called anybody to say, we don't know where these guys are.
Ooh.
Took them 8 hours from the mothership to call in the Coast Guard and say, we don't know where our friends are. Took them, they were waiting 8 hours to try and find them on their own. Anyway, yeah, that's interesting.
Okay. Mine is, we've talked about Bo Miles before. Bo makes YouTube videos and about all sorts of stuff, but he makes a lot of things, but he just has a really good way of telling stories and making videos about them. But he just bought a house to, renovate, like out in the bush in Australia. And it is in really, really bad shape. Like, the video is called Junk House because it is disgusting. But so it's him, and the video is basically him talking about the idea of them wanting to be out in, you know, away from everything. And they found this house that's right on the edge of the bush. And, he and his wife bought it to turn it into a place where their family can go, and then they can disappear into the woods for a long time, you know, whenever they want to. But it's basically them walking through the house and talking about all the different things that they find and that they have to change and fix, and like, it's bad. So it'll be really interesting to watch him, because, you know, like, we've seen people rehab houses, take bad old ones and make them, you know, something that you can rent, or making them look all fancy and everything. And
working,
that's
working my way through that right now. Yeah.
Yeah, we know people like that. But Bo, I don't know him in any way, but from watching his videos, he's not the person who's going to strip it all out and renovate it to this crystal clear, beautiful Airbnb type place. He seems like the person who is going to find some junk on the side of the road and figure out a way to make that junk way cooler and put it in this old house that is junk from the road. You know what I mean? Like, he's...
Yeah. In the video, he says he's reclaiming stuff. He's going to do it as cheaply as possible.
Yeah.
And just use reclaim stuff, which is such a great approach.
Yeah. So it'll be really cool to see how he goes about making that house something for his family to use. So I'm excited about that. Yeah. That's what I got for this week. You guys got anything else?
No. Do we know if Make with Miles got his channel back yet?
I have not heard anything.
I believe
his last update was he got his Google account, but not his channel, which is really unfortunate.
Yes. So the hackers, according to his Instagram story, the hackers were streaming some live crypto thing. And then so YouTube took down the channel. And so he got his Google account back, but there is no YouTube channel. And so he's working to get that reversed.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's such a bummer. How do we prevent that? Like, how could that not happen? I have the thing where it says go to another phone or another device and say that you've signed in. So
yes, that is one way. So
maybe he didn't have that. How could we avoid this?
Even with two-factor authentication, hackers can still get around it. They can trick you. It's well documented. One of the best ways to keep that from happening is have an email address that's only associated with that YouTube channel and nothing else. That way that email address is not out there for somebody else to try to figure out and hack. That is one way. Two-factor authentication is a big thing you should do, but
you need to be suspicious.
Get around that. Yeah. Yep.
The other day I got four pins for my PayPal account. Just came to my phone. It's like, here's your pin for your PayPal account. Don't share this with anybody. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not trying to get into my PayPal account.
Yeah. There is another thing that is incredibly inconvenient that you can do. They have pass keys now that are attached to biometrics and stuff on your phone. And so like you have to do the face ID type thing or finger ID or whatever on your phone, on your device that's already logged in for the other login to YouTube or whatever to happen. So that is one thing. But the other way they can do that is a physical pass key. And it is a USB drive. You know, you have to have this thing plugged into a machine for that channel to be accessible from that machine. And so it would be really inconvenient to use, you know, if you needed to use YouTube from your phone, that's not going to work. If you needed to go from computer to computer, you would have to literally take that thing out and stick it into another computer. But that is one way for you to like hyper secure the access to it. I've not used this, so this is my assumption based on what I've read. Is that physical key has to be present for a login to work. And so that's one way to do it, I guess. And if you had like a Mark Rober style channel that was worth, you know, so many millions of dollars, that's probably the smart thing to do. You know, if you have some big thing that would just absolutely destroy, you know, a lot if you lost access to it, that inconvenience probably makes sense. But
yeah,
I hope he gets it worked out. That's a bummer. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Love you guys. Thank you.